This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Rekha Sharma, and I played Landry on Star Trek Discovery. You are listening to The Edge on Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge. I am your host, Amy Nelson, and with me is Patrick Devlin, who just returned from a wonderful family vacation. Welcome back, Patrick.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing great. I wish I was as relaxed as you, but I'm going to get there at the end of the school year. I will have a nice 2 months vacation, so.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't get 2 months. Even when I'm out, my wife makes me work. But no, so yeah, so my next vacation is not till the week of July 25th. So I have something to look forward to at least.
Yeah, excellent. Wonderful. Well, so listeners, we have finished season two of Discovery. I really can't believe that it's here. I remember looking forward to, oh, what's season two going to be about? And just all the hypothesizing and wondering. And we knew we were going to get Spock. And what's the story going to be like? It just, I can't believe that we're now on the backside of season two.
Yeah, I mean, we had to get there eventually, right? It kind of like, I don't know, as the season went on, it kind of felt like you had more season to go than you really did. And then it was just kind of over, and you're like, wait, I mean, I know I got a lot, but no more Star Trek?
I know.
For a while? But I want more Star Trek.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, well, we do get Short Treks, and we do have Picard coming out the end of this year, so we'll just have to wait patiently, and we are good waiters
as Star Trek fans. If you're a Star Trek fan, you are. Went a long time before Discovery, so I guess I can wait a couple more months.
They haven't even told us a release date for season three, have they?
No, they have not. They have not. Yeah. They have not told us when they're releasing the Short Treks yet either, have they?
Yeah, no.
So we don't know when the Short Treks are coming. We know Picard's coming later, but we don't know when exactly, right?
Right.
And then we have no idea about season three except that it exists. Like, yeah. That it's going renewed. To happen.
Yeah.
So.
Well, for this recap episode, I really wanted to focus just on the storylines. And as you know, listeners, we will definitely be going through and spending an entire episode on character development, but I'm just going to push that to the side. And Patrick, I want to ask you, if you had to tell someone what was season two about, what would you say?
That's a good question, because it was about a bunch of stuff, but I think the main theme of this season, if I had to boil it down to a sentence or a few, would basically be self-preservation. The season was really about self-preservation. It all started early on when we saw the sphere for the first time trying to preserve its knowledge. It was really trying to preserve itself, and that carries through the rest of the season. Now, I know there's a lot of themes that tie into that, but my main thing is that everything was done to preserve whatever history they wanted to get to, whatever beliefs they had for the future. So, for themselves, that's true of Spock, it's true of Burnham, it's true of the Sphere, it's true of Georgiou, it's true of Leland, it's true of everybody in the show.
Saru, yeah.
Saru Culver. For sure.
Yeah.
You know, and we see that time and time again. And I don't think we really talked about that while it was going on, but when it was all over, it smacked me like a ton of bricks. Like, that was the main theme to me.
Okay, so that's a good theme. So we're going to table that for an entire discussion because I really do love that. But what is the story about? What's the storyline?
The story itself. Oh, well, if I had to break down the story quickly, I mean, it's obviously we have family getting back together, family that haven't spoken for a while, right? That's the beginning. And then Spock is obviously has some kind of issue. So we're trying to fix that problem. We have this control issue that's coming, which we find out a few episodes in, that it's going to come out and destroy the universe, basically. And the way in which that goes about and how we get to a resolution at the end where we believe, at least at this point, that control's been dealt with. Okay. You know, I mean, there's a lot in the middle there, but without being too specific about characters or themes, it's hard to talk about the story.
Okay.
For me, anyway.
All right. That's interesting because the storyline for me was, okay, the crew is investigating these red signals, and then it leads to them finding out that there's a red angel behind it, and then they realize that they were the red angel, and it sort of loops back around, and then they go off to the future.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that is very true. But I don't think you can boil this show down to just one sentence anyway.
Yeah.
There's too many story threads going on at once. Because, yeah, you could talk about the Red Angel, but you could also ignore the Red Angel and still get to the same outcome of explaining what happened this season.
See, I disagree with you.
I just did it. Like 3 minutes ago.
Oh, well, okay.
You know, I mean, yes, the red anomalies played a huge part, right? But
that's what I think the story is about.
I don't know. I don't know if the red anomalies are really that important. The red angel is, but again, I can tell you, without telling you that part, I can explain to you what happened in this season. Because in this season, we find out that they're trying to preserve their future, right? And that, yes, they were investigating first, but you can almost knock off the first couple episodes and still get to that point with the sphere and moving forward. Yeah. I get it. Terralysium wouldn't be there. I know. People are screaming right now. Yes, we would have missed Terralysium. We would have missed... There's information we would have missed in those. I get it. You just don't need the red anomalies to bring you there in the first place. That was the vehicle they used to get us into the story, though. And the story, to me, was the preserving of the Federation and mankind and everything kind. That was the story to me.
Huh. Okay. Well, maybe I missed the story then. I like it.
No, I mean, I don't think there's one right answer. So yeah. It's not that you're wrong and I'm right or I'm wrong and you're right. I think that there's going to be a million ways to describe what happened here. And a lot of it, some of it is a fault of the writers because at times they felt like they were writing one-off episodes and other times they were continuations. And so I think that confused some people through the middle of that show, or not really the middle, more towards the beginning. But either way, even if you talk about a show like Game of Thrones, that happens. It's one season cannot be boiled down to a 10-minute discussion.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Very true. So let's talk. Gosh, I like the preserving theme. But we're going to table that, really, because I want to do a whole episode on that.
No, but I think that deserves an episode, just like the character development deserves its own episode. There's probably more themes we could pull out of here that they deserve their own individual episodes. Like, this is a recap. It's supposed to be just a recap.
So, going back to the red signals and the red angel, did you like the fact that we were told and that we were all guessing that it was Burnham? And then there was the twist that, oh, it was her mother, Jillian, but then, oh, it really is Burnham. Did that storyline twist work for you? Because I'm going to say it totally worked for me and I enjoyed the ride.
Nope. I can't say yes now just because it happened, because anyone could go back in the archive and listen to me hate it. From day one, I hated the idea that it would be Burnham. I hated the idea that they lied to us and said it was the mother just for it to turn out to be Burnham again.
Huh. I like the twist.
Hated it.
Oh.
Not my thing. Here's the problem with it. here's my problem with it. We could end up in the exact same place without the mother.
Yeah.
The mother's useless. No, she's useless. The information was in the sphere with not the mother's information, with Burnham's information. The mother literally did nothing in that part of the story to make Burnham get in that suit.
Okay. So the one thing that stands out to me is that when Jillian said, I spent, and we don't know how many times she came back, but I put you in the path of the sphere. So she had an influence.
And we don't know. She put the sphere in the path of them. But okay, yeah. That's great. But she did nothing to get Burnham in that suit. The sphere had the data because Burnham's obviously done. This is not the first time through the loop. Right? It can't be, because if it was the first time, then you don't have the red signals. So this is not the first time through the loop. And because of that, they use the data that they got from Burnham doing the jumps to make the suit for Burnham to wear.
Okay. It could be the first time through, and it is the first time
through. No, it can't be the first time through. Then the red signals do not exist.
Yeah. She went back to the future.
Awesome. Then how? She actually went back to the past. But
yeah, back to the past.
How does she get the? See, that's the problem with time travel shows in general. How does she get the information to create the suit for herself? We were told very specifically that the suit has to be tailored to the user. No one else can use it.
Right.
Okay. Jillian didn't give her any information for that. The sphere did. Correct.
But they built the suit. No, because her mother had the information.
The original suit, but we don't need to see Jillian for that. They could just tell me that. You don't need to see Jillian to know that. We knew that way before we saw Jillian.
Right.
But the suit was tailored exactly for Michael Burnham.
Because they built it for Michael based on the they only did that
because the sphere had the data. They only did that because the sphere had the data for Michael Burnham. So when did they figure it out on their own without Jillian doing it? Or in the first run through the loop, which would have been way better, did Jillian give them the information for the suit?
Yeah.
No, but they didn't explain any of that. That's why this doesn't work for me.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Literally, I could take all of Jillian's scenes out, right? And nothing changes in the story. It's like Indiana Jones all over again.
What does that mean? I don't
catch. Watch the first Indiana Jones movie. He's useless.
That was the best one.
Yeah, I understand that, but he literally does nothing to change the outcome of that movie.
Oh.
It's a phenomenal movie, and if you really look at it, he does zero to make anything. All of that. The bad guys end up with the staff anyway and kill themselves. He did nothing to fix the movie.
That's true.
And that's Jillian. She did nothing to get to the outcome of this movie other than set up a device to distract us from the fact that it was going to be Michael all along. And that's my problem. My problem with the scene, I went on about it for an hour on this podcast. I love the actress. I want to see her. What I don't like is that she was used strictly to make me believe it wasn't Burnham just to tell me an episode later it was.
Okay.
That's my problem. One of the things I did like about the Burnham scene, though, being the Red Angel. Actually, I didn't like the fact she was a Red Angel. But if we're going to have it, one of the things I did like was that when she got there, she couldn't open up a portal. Portal's the wrong word. Yeah. To the future. Because she still had to go back and do all the signals.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, because it wouldn't make sense the other way. I mean, we probably wouldn't have thought about it, but it really doesn't make sense the other way. If she just shows up and poof, goes to the future. It was done more so they have time to, you know, fight and stuff. But it makes more sense that she would have to do all the things she did the first time around to set those signals so that they see them then, so that they get to this point again.
Yeah, that loop that just makes me pull my hair out.
Well, what's funny is I was just, what was I just watching? Oh, I can't tell anyone. Never mind.
Okay, you'll tell me off air.
No, just, if you want to know how time travel works, watch Marvel's Endgame.
Oh, Avengers Endgame. Yeah. Don't say anything because I haven't seen it yet.
Right, so I just realized after I said that I was watching something, it was Marvel's Endgame. They explain why none of this makes any sense in that movie.
Okay. I'm going to try and go see it this weekend. Both.
I saw it on the cruise. It was awesome.
Oh, awesome. So one thing that I still don't understand the connection. So Jillian says that that she put the sphere in their path, right? And that so they found the sphere data. So does that mean that the sphere data would have been found and that Control would have taken over, built the AI, and killed all sentient life? I always figured that it was because of Discovery that's how Section 31 even found the sphere. And so I sort of felt like, well, if Discovery wouldn't found the sphere, then we wouldn't have even had this whole second half of the season, because no one would have done anything to the sphere and it was going to die anyways.
Right. So that's, yes, that's the problem with this story too. I'm glad you're bringing these things up and not me. She literally put it in the path to get taken. I mean, so by that logic, because she said she's done, she keeps jumping and trying. She's tried, I don't know, she said some kind of number on how many times she's tried to fix it or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it's never succeeded. So I have to assume that every other attempt to make it go some random place or whatever made it get picked up by somebody who eventually got back to Section 31, right?
Okay.
I have to assume that, because otherwise this doesn't work. Otherwise, you are the problem, Jillian. You're not the answer. And that what she did was specifically make sure that the Discovery finds it, because she felt they were the only crew that would have any chance of protecting it, I guess. But again, this is my point. This is like try like 8,000 now of moving this thing. So how many tries did they put it? Did she put it in front of Discovery and hope to help?
Yeah, that's true. And I'm fine with that, in part because I love cause and effect on TNG, and we see it over and over again until finally Data figures it out. So I'm used to this trial and error and get it till it's right, but...
But they don't... Right, but in cause and effect, we see the trial and error.
Yeah.
Right, at the episode with Mudd, we saw him doing it over and over again, right? In this, we're just supposed to suspend disbelief and believe it's happened a lot of times.
Okay.
Which I think is part of my problem here. Like, there was no explanation as to how many times they really tried, or how many times Michael Burnham has been in the suit in whatever many temps. I don't know. I know I'm probably nitpicking too much on this little fact. It just seems a little crazy to me.
One of the things that I had an issue with the AI, this artificial intelligence, that, you know, if someone comes across the sphere, they're going to get this data. And then we're assuming that it's going to lead to the destruction of all sentient life. Like, it just is, for me, a very large leap. And a leap that I don't like seeing in Star Trek, because to me, Star Trek is a hope for the better future, not the destruction of all sentient life. And the fact that we are told over and over again, no matter what, if you get massive amounts of information, thousands of years, multi-culture, that is going to be used against humanity. And I understand for the storyline, but I don't like it. I don't like my Star Trek doing that. It's fine for a villain, but this whole idea of humanity is being destroyed because of knowledge didn't sit well with me.
In fact, I think it's perfect for today. I think it's exactly what today needs, because we assume, you're assuming that knowledge is proper knowledge. You're assuming that knowledge is good knowledge.
Knowledge? What do you mean?
No, not all knowledge is good. I'd like to point you to every anti-vax page on the internet right now, and everyone who thinks they're an expert in a field because they searched out articles on Facebook. See, I think this has
direct ties to what's going on in society right now, where people just read headlines on social media and believe they're experts in fields. Just because you think you have more knowledge doesn't mean the knowledge is actually correct.
Okay, so then I think that's an opinion versus knowledge.
I understand that, but that's not what people who read the articles believe. I believe that this knowledge killing everyone control is a direct metaphor for these bad news articles that people see all the time.
Hmm.
Could they have explained that a little better? Probably. Because one of the problems with this argument is that, well, they get the information from Michael Burnham's suit from it. Again, it's a vehicle to get you to that point. And that's another problem I have with this. But I believe that this whole thing is that just accumulation of knowledge, quote unquote, knowledge, is not good.
Yeah.
You have to actually make sure that what you're learning and what you're reading is actually right and actually factual, not just someone claiming it's factual. We see it constantly. In fact, I'd be willing to bet you more people believe nonsense they read on Facebook than actual news outlets nowadays.
Yes, I would agree with you.
Well, we had a huge campaign about fake news, right?
Yeah.
Well, control. Yeah.
Social media has definitely
It's not just social media. There's a lot of people getting into it. A lot of people claiming things that are just fake because they feel like saying it. I'm sorry if I'm offending a listener right now, but I know the world is not flat. I don't care what you have to say. I don't care what articles you show me. They're not real. Those articles are fake. They're lies. But there's a lot of people who believe it.
So, but you still put that with under the realm of knowledge. That's my question. We just assume knowledge.
We're just assuming that if we define knowledge as only things that are factual, we're assuming that the sphere only has knowledge. It could just have bad information.
Right. Huh.
I never saw what it knows.
See that.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Just because, and everyone who's a crazy conspiracy theorist or believes the world is flat knows a lot of truthful things. Doesn't mean they're all right. Everything they know is correct just because they know some stuff.
So with that and your philosophy about that, do you feel that humanity is going to destroy themselves no matter what the outcome?
No, I don't think so. I think, though, if enough of a population blindly believes bad information, that you'll end up with a bad situation. Does Star Trek take that to an extreme and destroy all of civilization? Yes, they do. But I can point...
That's what I have the
problem. Really? I can point out bits of history that would suggest that's exactly what would happen. Salem Witch Trial was a perfect example of bad information used to murder people for land. Essentially for land and money. Political clout, too. But it was bad information used about fake witches that killed a lot of people because enough people believed the information. There was no internet back then to spread that information worldwide. But there is now. Very easily can spread information worldwide. There's tons of others, but Salem Witch Trials is the biggest one that comes to mind for me, and I'm sure. But we can look at Waco, Texas. You can look at Heaven's Gate. You can look at any of the cults that have drinking the Kool-Aid in Jonestown. All of those things were people who believed they were factually correct and always right, and they weren't. But they went to destroy their own society.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one that comes to my mind is way back in the way Galileo and, saying, and many civilizations realized that the earth was not the center, that the sun was, that we traveled around the sun. But they were, branded badly as heretics
So I believe that my personal belief is that this is a commentary on that fact, that just because you acquire information doesn't mean you know anything. Doesn't mean you know the right things or that you're following things the proper ways.
So knowledge with experience leading to wisdom is the proper course.
Correct. And we live in a society today where people just don't believe experts. This is kind of getting off the topic of Star Trek, but it's true. And that's what I believe. Look, Star Trek has always talked about what is happening right now. And one thing that I've noticed about watching Star Trek, as long as I've noticed, I've watched it, is that we don't always realize the message when it's given to us. We don't always see it immediately. Sometimes it takes a few years. And I think in a few years, we're going to look back on this and go, wow, was that a real commentary on what was going on?
Yeah.
Because, like I said, we do live in a society now where people tell you one thing and you're just like, I don't believe that. Why not? Because I'm allowed to have my opinion. You are. That's correct. But when all evidence says you're wrong, it's no longer an opinion issue. The sky is blue. Period. End of story. There is no I see it purple.
Yeah.
Rant over, I suppose.
Yeah. And I think with time, you know, and as we get more advanced technologies and understanding of science and what's going on, we get more knowledge, hence wisdom, because of our experience.
I would hope so, but I don't see that as what's going on today in society at all. In fact, as we've gotten more technologically advanced, and my cell phone can do more than the first moon landing, than the Apollo missions. I mean, there's more computer power here than almost any spaceship that went up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And yet more people believe nonsense.
That's an opinion.
I don't know about that. There wasn't that many flat earthers in 1985. They're making a strong comeback. That's a fact.
You're really onto this flat earther thing. I have not seen, I don't know one person.
Really? I know plenty.
Really?
I personally know more than a few.
Plus,
there's a lot of famous people who are. A few basketball players, a couple rappers.
Oh, man, that just blows my mind. Okay, no judgment. No,
absolutely. I'm sorry. I said it before. I don't care. Yeah. I'm sorry if I'm offending you, but the fact is the Earth is round. It just is. That's a fact. Yeah. I don't need to go to space to know that because the people who've done that have told me it. So when it comes to my opinion versus an expert's facts, their facts win every time. You know, and people will tell you.
And the mathematicians.
Right.
I believe
that. Here's the bottom line, too. If you go stand on the beach, right, and you watch a boat sail straight away from you, you'll see the bottom of the boat start to disappear.
Okay.
The reason that happens is because the Earth is curved. So the bottom of the boat actually disappears before the top of the boat. If it's a sail, you'll see just the sail at one point. And the sail will get shorter and shorter and shorter and disappear. That's because the Earth is round. It's not for any other reason than the Earth is round.
Curving.
So the only place this works is on the ocean because it's the only place you have a sight line with nothing in the way. But it would happen anywhere else, except you have trees and mountains and hills and other stuff that get in the way. We also know it's round because if you fly in one direction, you'll end up in the same place eventually.
True.
So, whatever. It just drives me crazy because they are making a huge comeback now in 2019, or it started in like 2009, I think, whatever. But my point is, this is the kind of thing that this show is talking about. Now, do I think we're going to get to the catastrophic issue that we are in, you know, in Star Trek Discovery? No, I don't. But go ask the community is getting hit with massive amounts of measles right now and see if they feel that way. Because they feel like they could end up in a place that wipes out a lot of humanity.
Yeah.
Bad information. It just is. And a lot of people like to say, well, you know, science gets things wrong all the time. Yes. And you know why we know that? Because science continues to ask the questions to make sure they get it right. That's what makes science so great.
Yes.
That if they do get something wrong, they continue to question themselves till they get it right.
Yes. That's very true.
So
always questioning.
Right. And that has gone from a strength in many people's minds. Not a lot, not all, not even the majority, but I shouldn't even say that. It probably is the majority to some degree. But that has gone from a strength to a weakness of society, because it's gone from, well, I know science is right because if it's wrong, it'll tell me, to, you see how wrong it's been? It's absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. I have electricians that sit in my classroom and tell me that steel can't melt.
Well, what?
Thank you. Because they believe that 9/11, I live in New York. 9/11 was just a giant conspiracy. And they took the buildings down by purposely setting explosions, to which I have to ask then, what'd the explosion do if the steel can't melt? They can't answer that. But steel doesn't melt. So I asked them, where do I find a farm of girder beams? Where do I find I-beams just floating around in the ocean? obviously steel melts. You know what's even crazier about that? And I mentioned an electrician for a reason. We connect machines called welders that melt beams.
Right.
And but this is what I mean. They don't. I'm a teacher or instructor. I'm not certified as a teacher, but I'm an instructor. I teach these things, and they don't believe me, the expert, because them, the idiot, knows better.
Can I say that to my kids?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. What's the policy at your school? Sure.
No, I can't. They'd end up in tears.
Mine are adults.
You're poor students.
I tone down what I say for this podcast because mine are adults. But oh, it happens constantly. Goodness. And then, so I know we're off on a huge tangent, but I think it does tie back to this because I do think this is what this is really about. I think that's what this whole control thing was really all about. And it's, you know, the sphere and the AI and all that was really was the vehicle they used. And one of the reasons they use that vehicle is because AI is getting better and people fear technology as well. I mean, that's why we saw it like in the '80s, movies like Tron and stuff like that came out because people were fearing the internet. This is just another version of that story, but I think it has heavier ties into society because I hope it does, because that's what Star Trek means to me. More importantly than everything else we've talked about is that this show should be a commentary on us.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, in my opinion, this is what it's trying to say in season two.
So another storyline that I thought was interesting was that they, you know, put Spock in, and then it just was the search for Spock. And then we've got to find him. We're on his trail. Oh, we lost him. Like the first half of the season. And then we finally get Spock. And then now it was more that we found him, but now we're finding Spock. Like he's finding himself and, you know, going along with that preservation theme. But what do you think about this search for Spock storyline?
I mean, well, we talked about it when it happened. Like, I know a lot of people were, like, angry that it took so long to find him, just to find him, but it didn't bother me. I mean, we knew we were getting to it, right? I thought it was a good story. I didn't want to see a whole season of Spock, I don't think. I think it was better because we have a lot, we know a lot about Spock already. And as much as people don't want to hear it, TOS does matter. What they wrote there does count. So we didn't need, I think they did a good job once we found him, getting to a point where we could believe this would be who he is at this point. And I feel that they felt, maybe the writers felt, they were a little hand-tied in what they could do with him, so they didn't want him throughout the whole season. And really, we got more on Pike, right? Who's a character we know very little about, and we got a lot on him, because he was involved in a lot of this. So I think it was a good decision to wait as long as they did just to even find him. And then even when they found him, you know, his brain is messed up. He's not working properly. It's not registering. He's talking backwards, we find out, and other things. So I think it was good that we had that buffer before we got to Spock. Like, they told us we're going to see Spock, so, all right, we're all waiting for it. I get it. We're all anxious to see Spock. We all love Spock. We're Star Trek fans, so yeah, Spock. But I didn't need a whole season of him. I think what we got was good. I think the development we got through the time was great. So I think it worked out perfect.
Yeah. I'm still out with my opinion. I see it as a B plot of the entire season, and I'm just not quite sure how invested I am, and I'm, don't send me hate mail. Just send it all to Patrick.
Yeah, you can, because honestly, I don't even think it's a B plot. I think it was more like a C or D plot, but
Okay.
I think first is preservation, second is Burnham's story again, because that's what this has all been about for the first two seasons. Even finding Spock was really about Burnham's story. Then you got the Red Angel as a C. I mean, he falls down to D or E. But when you have season-long arcs, you know, there's a lot more than an A and a B, so.
Right, yeah. Huh. Man, I'm still putting the Red Angel as
To me, it's a vehicle.
Hmm.
And maybe it's because I don't like the fact that it was Burnham. All right. Oh, it's still my... See, there's an opinion for you. This is, in fact, I'm allowed to not like the Red Angel. However, if I told you it didn't exist in the show, that would be lying.
Yes. So I thought with the Spock thing, I think you're right. It added to Burnham's story. And, oh, I did hear this talking about how you're saying that this is Burnham's story. And yeah, I guess, you know, an A plot, B plot is Burnham's story and transformation through the season. Were you, and I'm seeing a lot of, and I just recorded postcards, like Burnham burnout. And I thought, well, that's a cute little catchphrase there. Do you have Burnham burnout?
Me personally, no, I do not. I don't mind seeing her every episode. Heavily in every episode. When Haley sat in for you, she used that term. So I don't know if that was one of the first times we've heard it, but she definitely used that term on the edge when she sat in for you. I understand it, I guess, but I don't know. It's serialized television. It's the way it works. That's how it's supposed to be. Maybe it's that people do watch Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones does not do that, but Game of Thrones also kills people every other episode. So it's a little different. Most of the time when you have this kind of show, go look at Lost, there's your main character, and then there's everybody else. And everybody else kind of sits on somewhat equal footing, but they're still your main character. There's the one person you're going to follow more than everybody else. It's just the way it is. Maybe that's one of the things that Game of Thrones did great that other shows don't do, is that they change who that main character is every so many episodes. But that's not realistic for a show like Star Trek, in my opinion. We still saw, no matter what anyone says, we saw more Picard than almost anybody else in TNG, right? We still saw more about Kirk than anybody else on TOS. We saw more about Archer than anybody else. Now, did people like T'Pol and Trip get heavy screen time? Yeah, they did. But so did Pike. So did Spock when he showed up. You know, so did Tilly. Those people still got heavy screen time. They just weren't the main focus of the show. And I also think, you know, we got a lot of Burnham because they made a point to make the focus not a captain. What are you going to do? Focus on the captain then? Well, now you change the focus of the show.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So
that's very true. Yeah. And, you know, and I appreciate knowing that, the focus is not the captain, and it's still interesting to see how she plays off whoever the captain is, whether it be Lorca or Pike, you know. And so I like seeing that, you know, go through, especially in Star Trek, where it has always been the captain.
Yeah, I mean, look, it makes sense to make a show about a captain. It does. It's risky.
Because they're the commanders.
Right, it's risky to do what they did and not make it about a captain. That's one of the things I think the writers have done very well. I think they've been able to write it about someone else, but still keep the captain involved enough that the show makes sense. I don't think this particular show with this kind of storyline would make sense being a Lower Decks show. It just wouldn't, because what the heck do they know? You know,
exactly. I mean,
you can write a Lower Decks show, obviously, but it's not going to be this kind of show.
Yeah. We'll save it for the animated.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can even do a live-action one, but it would not be as serious and dealing with such serious topics as I believe this show is dealing with. Because they're just not in a position to look at things the same way as the characters we're used to looking at them.
Well, yeah, and, you know, someone in the Lower Decks does not have all the information, does not have the facts, does not have the knowledge of all the events in order to make an informed decision that's going to affect an entire starship.
It would lose a lot of drama.
Civilization,
because
whatever.
Basically, if they do anything other than listen, it's ridiculously wrong. I mean, so it would be more of a comedy at that point, right? Which is what we're basically looking at here. So, for a Lower Deck show. But, you know, whatever. I mean, I thought that was one of the things they did very well. They kept enough people involved that I personally don't have burnout. I've heard a lot of people say it. I don't really personally don't understand it. I understand why people would say it, because we saw her so much. I don't feel it. You know, I just don't. Mm-hmm. I'd have no problem seeing her. What about you? Do you feel that way?
I got a little bit at the very end, and maybe it was just the such sweet sorrow part one that I just You know, and I think about it because I'm like, I like getting the character development, but it seems like every character development is for Burnham's benefit. And again, I knew this coming in. The writers told us this is going to be a show about Michael Burnham. So there was, you know, sometimes and people on the Babel conference, you know, gets the head tilt and her whispering, please just trust me, or please just the head tilt and the please. And it was a little bit getting on my nerves, but it went away once I stopped thinking about
it. I'm more concerned with how many goodbyes we have to see in one season. It was just too many of those. I got goodbye burnout.
Yeah.
I did, because by the time we get to the one that matters, I didn't even care.
Yeah.
Couldn't care. Great, Pike's leaving. We're going to get another goodbye.
No, that one was still meaningful.
Yeah, because it was Pike. But honestly, if that...
Because it was Anson Mount. What are you talking about?
If it was anyone else, would you have cared?
Well, we know we're saying goodbye to Spock.
Yeah, we didn't get a stand-up walk away from Spock, though, did we?
Well, he's not the captain. Yes, and Burnham and Spock had their proper goodbye. He said, I love you in Vulcan, which was beautiful, and we talked about that last
episode. That's not the kind of goodbye I'm talking about. I just mean the whole crew standing up was so overplayed in this season. It drove me crazy.
Ah, I liked it.
Yeah, and I like Burnham.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so I have a question for you.
Okay.
There's been debate, and it seems like I'm like standing on an island over here, but I'll just pose the question and you can answer. Is Burnham coming back or not next season?
Yes. Okay. Why would she?
Because everyone believes she's not. Yes.
No.
Yes, they do. I mean, I believe she's coming back. I was yelled at quite a lot about believing she was coming back, and everyone gave me every excuse in the world as to why everyone in the crew but Burnham is coming back.
Who are you talking to? I don't know anyone in the Babel conference. Oh!
Just to name one, but she wasn't the only one who said it. She's just the only one I could think of on the top of my head without looking back.
Oh, we love Karen, though.
That's why I remember it. She's actually going to be on Warp 5. Yeah, she
really?
Is. Her, I, and Brandon... Her, Brandon, and I, the proper way to say that, are doing, I forget our topic, but yeah. So listeners, you know, Warp 5, we're going to have one of the Babylians on soon. I say that, and I say that because I'm not picking on Karen. It's just literally the only person I can think of off the top of my head that did say she doesn't think that Burnham's coming back.
No, we're getting Burnham and Saru and whoever else was on the Discovery. We're going to see them.
I absolutely agree. But apparently, I was kind of standing on an island with that one. I've gotten used to standing on an island on this podcast, though, so it's okay. Usually the only person who has my back is Mark. That's only because, you know, it's Mark.
It is Mark. Oh, my negative.
And we love him, too. So there's all spectrums here of people we love. So. But so that didn't go as planned. I thought that would be a longer discussion. But because I do believe she's coming, I don't understand where people are even getting the idea she's not. I mean, it was really in reference to arguing about my seventh signal issue.
Oh, right.
That they don't believe she's coming back. Either way, they negate their own argument because once they say the crew is coming back, it destroys the credibility of the argument. Because my argument was that by showing the seventh signal, you've already told me everyone's coming back. So even if Burnham stays, I was really right? Because everyone else is coming back. So one person stayed, great. The crystal has to work again in order to get everyone else back. So,
yeah. No, I really believe they're going to the future. 930 years, and that's where the show's going to pick
up. Me too. What I did read, which was an interesting, this was a, man, I should have wrote names down. I'm sorry. Someone pointed out, and it was a great explanation, because my problem was, all right, they go 930 years into the future, right? And in that future, civilization has been destroyed by control. And I had said this on our last podcast, and I'm wrong. And they pointed out that I'm wrong. They pointed it out very nicely, but they could have just said, Pat, you're wrong. Because if they get control to 950 years in the future, 930 years in the future, control never exists to kill all sentient life. And since that doesn't happen, we have Calypso.
Right.
So if the last scene does not happen, Calypso does not exist. See, when we talked last time, we talked about how if they go 930 years in the future, Calypso can't happen because all sentient life would have been destroyed by control. But because that last scene happened, we now know that Calypso is plausible because sentient life does still exist in the universe.
Exactly.
So I forget who wrote that to me, but then, yes, I agree with that. However, I still think that the seventh signal happens after they get 930 years into the future, which tells me that the crystal works, which tells me that they didn't want to make people mad, which is a problem. It's again, this is a society issue. And I don't think they're trying to comment on this, but they are commenting on this by accident. People want instant gratification. If you look at the last episode we did and you read the comments, you'll see that people, again, Karen, I was talking with Karen. This was just me and Karen, though. She asked if I'm a sadist not wanting to see that signal. Why are we so obsessed with getting an answer right now in this society today? Why can't we wait 4, 5, 6 a year for an man, I waited 2 for Game of Thrones. But
yeah,
right. Why can't, like, our society in general has become so obsessed with getting information right now that the writers were too afraid to let that linger till the first episode of next season. That's weird to me. I remember, like, the 80s and 90s where you and a season would end, man, that was it. You had to wait. And, oh, we didn't have DVR, so, oh, man, if you didn't see the episode, that's even worse. You had to find a way to see it on a repeat or wait for the VHS to come out and then find out you still had to wait months for the answer.
Yeah, that's you had to read the TV guide to look for these reruns.
Really cool shapes, and now they're regular magazines. What happened? What happened to us?
Yeah. It's a need it now.
But it really society. And that it's not just this community, it's not just these it's society. Society needs their information now. They can't wait. And I want to be told by the TV show to wait for an answer. One of the biggest cliffhangers of the season was that Jillian wasn't the real Red Angel we were chasing. It was another Red Angel.
Mm-hmm.
They waited 1 week. 1 week to drop the answer on us. And they dropped it really early in the episode.
They did.
Because they were too afraid to make people mad for waiting for an answer. Come on. That's what makes TV shows great.
Yeah.
It's called suspense, guys. It's called suspense.
Yeah. Best of both worlds, part one.
It's just... Ugh.
I think that's why a lot of people... Well, one of the reasons, because it is an excellent episode. But the waiting over the summer, like you mentioned it, and that's what people agonize. They can remember it. It makes that episode even stronger, is because of the waiting.
And I get it, because the writers probably hear people that they agonized over it. Yeah, okay. Let me agonize. Let me feel that way. That makes it memorable, like you just said. I get it. While I'm going through it, it's going to drive me crazy. But once I get the answer, it'll, provided it's written well, it will be worth it. You write a good second part, it'll be worth it.
Yes. This totally reminds me of a teaching strategy that is very valuable. And it's, you allow your students to struggle, because them struggling and then getting the answer, it's going to make it even more impactful that, one, they were able to get the answer that they had to struggle so hard. That's going to add value to what they know and will give them a higher rate of success in the future because they know that they can overcome. I know this is totally side and teaching, blah, 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 but it totally reminds me that you need the struggle.
Right. It just, there's already, like, I talked to you off air. On my cruises, I like the fact that I'm not connecting my phone anymore because I no longer have instant answers to things. When I get home, I'm just, like everybody else, I think of something and I Google it. And the answer's right there. Now, that's great, and it seems great, but I also don't retain half as much as I used to because I just Google it and move on.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna. These episodes are not going to be the moment that the seventh signal popped up is not going to become a memorable moment for me. It's just not. It happened 6 seconds after I thought it should have. Mm-hmm. Now, had I had to wait a summer to find out if she made it 930 years, that would have made an impression on me. But I already know she did.
Mm-hmm.
The battle, her trying to open the thing, that'll stick with me, probably. But the fact that she got there, it's going to make no lasting impact. No realistic lasting impact.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. So, as far as the story for season two, how would you rate the season? And I'm very curious to know, which season do you prefer, season one or season two?
I definitely prefer season two. I definitely enjoyed season two more than season one. I felt that they did a better job of keeping it a true serialized show, which is what I wanted. I felt the storyline was better, more well thought out. And I think part of that is that they changed writers early on in season one development and stuff, and just things got a little disjointed or whatever. I don't think season one was a terrible season, but whatever. I like season two better, and I don't even know what kind of numerical value I would give to the season, but it would be high. It would definitely be high, and as we got towards the end, the season actually got better because episodes early on that didn't seem to matter mattered a lot. You know, I always go back to this. The Sphere episode was a cool episode, but if that data didn't come back to become control, it's a throwaway episode. Because it did, that episode gets heavily bumped up in the ratings, which brings the whole season up because they were able to carry that through the rest of the season.
Yeah, that is one of the reasons why I also prefer season two, because how fun was it when we were recording and it's like, oh my gosh, remember when they were at New Eden? Oh my gosh, and Opal for Karin. Like, that was so much fun. And I thought the writing, was bringing it all back. And we're seeing the importance. We're seeing the importance of the short treks. Like, it seemed to be a more cohesive unit compared to season one. And so, I definitely prefer season two over season one. However, I am liking season one the longer that it sits with me, because I don't think I gave it a fair enough chance. But when I remember and when I think back to season one, I look back on it a little bit more fondly than I used to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That might also just be that you haven't watched it in a year. But
that's true.
Because some of the mistakes of season one were rather glaring to me. But as I wipe them from my memory, and I only remember the good times, that makes it better. However, I do think that they did a much better job in season two of writing this show. It flowed better. Like you said, it did tie back together. My only issue was, and someone had answered this in the Babel conference as well, the last two episodes were definite complete continuations. And like I said, the whole series should have felt that way. That's my only issue. Hmm. The whole point of serialized episodes is that one flows into the next, into the next, into the next. This whole idea that, well, Star Trek has never really been good on setting the time difference between episodes. No, there is no time difference here. That's the point of this. The point is that if there's a big jump in time, it's supposed to happen during an episode, not in between episodes. Otherwise, they're one-off episodes again. That's just the way it is. So, and the reason why the last two seem so joined together is because they were one episode that they couldn't get all the stuff in, so they made it two. Great. They tied in the third to last episode. Well, also, it flowed right in. I didn't see that in the beginning of the season. They did eventually tie those episodes, like New Eden and stuff, in to the series, but it took a little more work, and it really, I feel it shouldn't take that much work to tie them in.
And again, just exactly what you were saying, that's why I actually prefer the first half of the season, because it felt more one-off episodes. And to me, that's what
I understand. Like. No, I understand what you're saying, and I can understand people feeling that way. But the writers told me it's a serialized show, so write a serialized show.
Yeah.
You know, if we're reading this...
I'm still not sold that that's exactly what this is.
We can get into what the writers say and what they mean another time.
Well, that's true. That's
but if
true.
But if I'm reading this according to what they're telling me we're supposed to be getting, the first half of this show didn't live up to what they said they were doing. That's okay. My point. Now, they also said we would see a lot about, you know, the Klingons fallout, the war with the Klingon fallout. We didn't see anything.
Oh, don't get me started about not seeing the Klingons. No, but
forget even seeing the Klingons. Even when we saw them, and it really had nothing to do with the damn war.
No, it didn't.
It was, you know.
Yeah.
You tell me that the show is going to be about the Klingon War. All right. It was only season one. So the show is not about the Klingon War at all.
No.
Then you tell me, because now, again, they don't want to anger people. No. We're going to have a lot of fallout in season two. You just don't. It doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, don't get me started about the Klingons because I already miss them and I want Laurel back and Mary Chifo. But that's not going to happen. Anyways. Well, it has been fun talking about season two recap of Star Trek Discovery. But it isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. Here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Melodic Treks.
I dislike the way it sounds like this kind of marching, exploring, searching feeling of, I don't know. It's just something about it that gives you this connection. And it feels like almost like these famous... whether it's like Gunga Din or the Sahara with Humphrey Bogart, it feels like that kind of old movie vibe where they're out in the desert and, you know, they're part of a troop.
Literary Treks.
Yeah, I really wanted to start off the book kind of like basically right after the events that Dave portrays in Control, and just a little bit kind of as, if you remember from the end of Hearts and Minds, when Akkar and Picard are talking, and Akkar is giving Picard the business about all this stuff. I wanted to kind of just step back a couple paces and then run back into it again.
Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
I think you're absolutely right with Marina Sirtis, and she... I think she's talked about it. You know, she was sort of saying, you know, what's the accent meant to be? And they were like, well, she's a Betazoid. We never met one before. We don't know what the Betazoid accent is. Make something up. So she sort of made something up. I don't know where she came up with that accent, because it is quite weird, Troy's accent. And it does get progressively less noticeable as Next Gen goes on, to the point where by the movies, I mean, by the time you get to Drunk Troy and First Contact, to me, she just sounds more like Marina Sirtis and less like, you know, less even than kind of Americanized Troy.
Warp 5.
All right, now we are on to episode 3, Extinction. Archer, Reed, and Sato are threatened by a virus that mutates them into primal life forms.
All right, I'll take a break here. I'll see you guys in 5 minutes.
Also, then we already know Patrick's one.
So Patrick says no.
Okay, so no. So Brandon, I'd love to hear your take on this, Brandon.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave a star rating and written review.
Listeners, we have been talking about your star ratings and written review in iTunes. And as promised, we are going to give away not one, not two, but three Captain Pike pins by fan sets, generously donated by our associate producer, Chris Tribuzio. We are so grateful for those of you who wrote in and left us a star rating and written review. So to thank you, we will randomly draw names. Well, it's not actually drawing. We put your name in a app that Patrick has, and he's going to randomize it. And the first three names, we will then read the handle that you put on iTunes, and then please contact me, Amy Nelson, directly on the Babel Conference, and then I can get you an address and get this pin right to you in the mail so that you can get it as soon as possible. Patrick, are you ready?
I am ready. I am going to randomize exactly one time. It will show in the photo that we will post in the comment section of this episode.
Okay.
And there's your winners.
All righty. We have our three winners. They are Choopy12. So I think that's Karen Choopless. We have Artemis9991. And our third winner is Patrick Carlin. Yay!
Congratulations. You will all be receiving a great pin. I actually got mine while I was away and got home. And the first thing I did when I got home was rip open that package to see it. Our great associate producer sent me that and the NX01 pin. These pins are top quality. Yeah. They're some of the finest pins I've ever had. And I actually collect Disney pins. So they're just as cherished as my Disney pin collection.
Very good. So again, listeners, thank you so much. And I look forward to getting your direct message to me so that we can talk, and I will get that pin out to you pronto. Thank you. Well, don't worry. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the edge. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Amy, where can people find you when you're not dying to find out more about the Klingon Empire?
Well, when I'm not doing that, which seems to be now forever in my lot in life, you can find me here on the network. I am co-hosting Earl Grey, which is about Next Generation. I am on the Fandom Podcast Network hosting Discoville, which is about Discovery, and The Orville. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but really my favorite place right there in the Babel Conference. Now, Patrick, where can people reach you when you aren't confusing knowledge and wisdom?
Oh, well, when I'm not doing that, Facebook's probably not the right place, but I will be on the Babel Conference, which is on Facebook. I pop in there as often as I can. You know, different times of the year is different craziness in my life, so it's hit or miss. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicDrop5, where I try to tweet often, but don't. And you can find me definitely over on Warp 5, also going to be coming to you every other week, just like this show will be soon, and with my good friend Brandon Chamatala. And as I said earlier, apparently with Karen soon, who I think just won a pin. So she's coming up all roses here.
Yeah.
And
we did not plan this, for her. Listeners.
No. Not at all. I just hit randomize once. It shows right on the top of that bar. So that's where you could, those are the three best places to find me other than this podcast.
All right. Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd also like to thank our 11 favorite episodes of Discovery, our associate producers, in no particular order. Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mercer, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Millett, Chris Abusio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and in particular, The Edge.
Well, thank you for listening and join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge. Wait for it. Of Federation Space.